when the divinely appointed leader is not allowed to give guidance to the people in the position of leadership, then of course people become misguided. It's a natural thing that will occur in this kind of a situation. So we find that a lot of theological debates, arguments, confusions, misguidance was happening in this era of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, and of course all the other imams. And this is why we see that many of the imams spent a lot of their time clearing up these various confusions and these various different misconceptions about so many things. One of these things, of course, is compulsion and free will. This in Arabic is known as jabr, which is compulsion, force, and free will, which is ikhtiyar, right? This free will or choice. And so this is one of the things that was really quite talked about at that time. We find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, on many different occasions, he talked about this theological debate between compulsion and free will. He specifically had conversations with some people of Ahwaz, which is in modern-day Iran, in the southern parts of Iran, the city in the area of Ahwaz. And so Ahwaz, of course, also in that era was a hub of the Shia. There were many Shia who lived in Ahwaz. Of course, they lived in many different places, such as Baghdad and the Hijaz. Of course, you had some in Samarra, in the Khurasan area, Qom, Hamadan, Egypt, Basra, Kufa. These were all places where you could find a lot of, you know, relatively a lot of Shias in. And so Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, in this conversation with the people of Ahwaz, he refutes both compulsion and free will, right? So we find that the Ash'aris had adopted this idea that there was compulsion completely, it was only jabr, and that people had no free will, they had no option, they were compelled into their actions. And then we also find that the Mu'tazile, they believed the exact opposite. They believed in complete free will, in the idea that Allah has no power over the decisions of people. He has no control. Matter of fact, it is human beings who have complete and ultimate control over everything. And of course, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam speaks about this amr bain al-amrain, that it is neither complete compulsion nor is it complete free will, but is a matter between the two. And this is something, of course, that was originally spoken about by Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, because this is kind of where these issues started to come about. And in this conversation with the people of Ahwaz, of course, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he talks about how it is the reality of the matter is a moderate concept between compulsion and free will. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the World with Reporters.
Students at Harvard University filed a civil rights complaint against the school for not protecting pro-Palestinian students from, quote, terrifying and unchecked harassment. As the devastating effects of the so-called Palestine exception to free speech continues to wreak havoc at campuses across the nation.
When there is anti-Palestinian bias, it's not addressed and it's ignored. But when there is accusations of anti-Semitism, everyone's involved, it's highlighted. And so we do see an extreme difference in that. If, you know, campuses across the country are concerned about anti-Semitism, which they should be concerned, and now at this point they're concerned about anti-Israel bias, why are they not concerned about Palestinian bias? Especially, you know, Palestinians were grieving. I have students that have lost multiple family members. And then while they're, you know, having this anxiety and they have to study, they're also being vilified at the same time.
At the University of Illinois campus in Chicago, supporters of Palestine described how students and professors feel criminalized, intimidated into silence, and sense a threat of punishment for defending Palestine openly.
But I do think many, many faculty are just simply afraid to broach the topic because of their fear of consequences, whether that's, you know, people taking photographs of them, their lecturers videoing them and posting them on websites that will blacklist them. If they're being followed on campus, for example, that's something we've certainly had outside groups following students, following faculty, taking photos of them. And we don't know what's going to be used, creating dossiers on us and submitting them to administration. Like, these are all possibilities to repress pro-Palestinian advocacy and really sort of raise the intimidation and repression on campus.
When professors describe being openly stalked while on campus, which is supposed to be a secure area for students and teachers, the scale of the intimidation, hypocrisy, and injustice which Palestinians and their supporters are subject to becomes crystal clear.
You know, my experience is I've been followed on campus, you know, for up to an hour at a time, just following and taking photos, not engaging, not saying anything. I've had my photograph taken while giving public talks, while walking on campus. And again, it's not clear how these documents are going to be used or what the purpose of the intimidation is, which makes it that much more intimidating because we don't know what is going to happen, you know, what's down the line, what's, you know, what the future holds in terms of our safety.
Across the country, people have been punished for speaking out in favor of Palestine. And not just in academia. Death threats, lost jobs, and visits from security agencies have all been a part of the nation's largest Islamophobic wave since Donald Trump's so-called Muslim travel ban of 2017. The first solution at the University of Illinois and many other campuses is to overturn the intellectually false institutional policies which equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. The goal of the repression is obviously to raise the costs of speaking out. But Palestinian activists say they will never remain silent about Israel's atrocities. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Among Israel's countless atrocities is its killing of journalists, which has passed 100 during the current onslaught on Gaza. South African journalists have come out in at least four cities across the country to commemorate their slain colleagues.
We gather not only to commemorate our fallen peers, but to confront the heavy toll of the conflict. Conflict, as what the media like to say. The tally of the human lives lost, the countless narrative left untold, and the voices forever silenced.
As the latest Israeli assault on Gaza has reflected the clear divide of the media, it is not objectivity, but truth that protesters are demanding. Veteran journalists who covered the apartheid struggle in South Africa say you cannot get any closer to the story than the journalists in Gaza. They note that only those who capture the realities as they play out on the ground fall into this category. In their opinion, journalists are embedded with the Israeli media and have subjected their work to regime vetting.
have compromised the story. South African veteran correspondents also challenged the Western attitude towards the figures reported from Gaza, including the number of journalists killed.
What anyone who disputes the numbers is saying to us is that we don't trust the reporting because you're Arab or because you're Palestinian. Nobody whose office is in Europe can tell me that what my colleague in Ramallah tells me is not true. So there's that's the contradiction.
With at least one journalist killed daily in the ongoing Israeli aggression, South African media practitioners want international law to be upheld and an end to the killing of their colleagues. They say the death of journalists mean a blackout of truth. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
Only minutes before dawn on Sunday, January 28th, a roaring sound broke the silence of Iran's central desert. The Seymour satellite launch vehicle was successfully sent into space from Imam Khomeini Space Launch Terminal in Semnan Province with an unprecedented mission: to put three homegrown satellites into orbit with a minimum altitude of 450 kilometers and a maximum of 1,100 kilometers above the Earth's surface. The successful launch, marked by multiple injection of satellites into orbit, has ushered in a new era in the country's space program.
For the first time in the history of the country's space program, we managed to inject multiple satellites into space. Also, the satellite carrier managed to go beyond the altitude of 1,000 kilometers and reach an orbit as high as 1,110 kilometers.
Iran will, in the near future, be able to send heavy satellites weighing 250 kilograms into different altitudes of the lower Earth orbit on domestically manufactured Seymour satellite carrier. This indigenously manufactured satellite is yet another example of Iran's breakthroughs in the field of science and technology. Iran is now among the top 10 nations in the world that are capable of producing and launching satellites into aerospace. The three satellites launched into space simultaneously during this mission were Mahda, Hotef-1, and Kahan-2. Mahda's main task is to assess the performance of the Seymour launcher in multiple injections of space cargo at low altitudes, as well as evaluate new designs and the reliability of homegrown space technologies. Kahan-2 is developed for space-based positioning, and Hotef-1 is concerned with narrowband communications technology in the Internet of Things.
Despite being research satellites, they are really important to us because they enjoy various technologies developed by Iranian scientists. With this launch, as well as the ones that will take place in the near future, we seek to reach maturity in our space program and play a serious and effective role in the world's space industry.
Iranian officials have time and again stressed that the country reserves the inalienable and legitimate right to make scientific and research advances in the field of aerospace. They say Iran does not wait for permission from certain countries in order to use peaceful technologies to accelerate its scientific progress. Mahdia Posyan, Semnan.
A new poll from the English magazine The Economist has revealed a huge shift in the United States' perceptions of Israeli genocide. 35% of Americans say Israel is committing genocide, 36% say Israel is not, and 29% remain undecided. Not only is the once ardently pro-Zionist United States almost perfectly split on the question of Israel's genocide, pro-Palestinians are a single point from being the relative majority. A similarly historic shift was just registered at the United Nations top court in The Hague, which has ordered the Israeli regime to prevent the killing of more Palestinians.
The State of Israel shall, in accordance with its obligations under the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, in relation to the Palestinians in Gaza, take all measures within its power to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of Article 2 of the Convention. In particular, A, killing members of the group.
The Economist's poll found that Americans under 30 see Israel as genocidal by a 2-to-1 margin, 49% to 24%.
I think especially in the age of social media, with like a lot of young people on social media and like getting their news directly from Gaza, they see so clearly what's going on. They see the truth and there's no denying it. And I think the movements, especially on social media, have been so empowering and have made information so accessible that it's just when you actually see what's going on, I mean, there's really no other explanation or no other outcome than to, you know, be pro-Palestine or against the occupation or against the genocide.
However, the increased awareness of Israel's genocidal atrocities isn't something which is being reflected in Washington.
Congress recently shot down a resolution which would have made American military aid to Israel conditional on human rights, indicating just how much criminal latitude Washington is giving to Tel Aviv.
Youth-driven anger over the war crimes in Palestine is threatening to make Joe Biden a one-term president this November and perhaps split the Democratic Party. The poll showed that Democrats agree Israel is committing genocide by a whopping 49 to 21% margin.
Going back to 2020, when it wasn't an issue, you had the unified, you know, Democratic Party, and you know that you could have had a stance whether you want to be pro-Palestine or pro-Israel, because there wasn't a conflict going on. I think the conflict is causing a lot of people on the Democrat side to pick a side.
The poll found that 18% of Republicans say that Israel is committing genocide, which is a 40% increase from a poll last October 11th, which found that just 13% of Republicans agreed that Israel's military response was too much. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Yemenis from different walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other major cities. They commended the Yemeni army for its operations against vessels linked to the United States, the United Kingdom and Israel in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. They also reiterated their steadfast support for the Palestinian people.
The whole world is watching the Israeli genocidal war against the Palestinian people and its result and repercussions. Yemenis are also following what's happening with all their feelings. If what happened to the Palestinian people had happened to other people in the world, the situation would have been the same. The Palestinian people have been suffering for 75 years from continuous occupation, displacement, killing, and indiscriminate attacks, and they need us to stand with them, as we have one language, one religion, and as we are both suffering from oppression.
Protesters condemned the aggression of the US and UK against their country, while also expressing readiness to stand against the entire world in support of their Palestinian brothers.
The goal of the American-British aggression was to stop the Yemeni army's naval attacks, but they completely failed in achieving this goal. Their strikes continue and nothing has happened except that they have involved themselves in the ongoing conflict and are seeking to bring in other countries as well. They are now being targeted by the Yemeni army. The Yemeni armed forces are seeking to expand their operations and will not stop until the genocide committed by Israel in Gaza comes to an end.
Earlier, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, declared that the Yemeni army's naval operations would go on until the entry of food and medicine into Gaza is permitted. He emphasized that any escalation by the US and UK would yield contrary outcomes and would not diminish Yemen's resolve.
People in Yemen say they fully support all decisions made by the political and military leadership in confronting the Western powers. They assert that they have authorized the Yemeni army to escalate its naval operations until Israel ceases its genocidal war in Gaza. Abu Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
It was a ruling weeks in the making. Lawyers acting for South Africa had requested the International Court of Justice implement special measures that would prevent more deaths and a further humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. This whilst the main case of genocide is considered against Tel Aviv, a process which could take years.
In the court's view, the aforementioned facts and circumstances are sufficient to conclude that at least some of the rights claimed by South Africa and for which it is seeking protection are plausible. This is the case with respect to the right of Palestinians in Gaza to be protected from acts of genocide and related prohibited acts identified in Article 3, and the right of South Africa to seek Israel's compliance with the latter's obligations under the convention.
Free Palestine!
Outside the court, pro-Palestinian activists had a mixed response.
It is a bittersweet feeling that I'm having now. It's as if finally there is international recognition that the Palestinian people are facing the threat of genocide, that they are facing vicious war crimes. It's as if we have to be grateful that they're finally recognizing it, right? And to hear also the evidence that the judge stated, it was very painful to hear all this evidence there. But still, the people on the ground right now, I don't think it will benefit them at all on the short term. So it's also very painful to realize that.
The whole world knows it. They are exposed. That means that the people, the normal people who are not affected by the politics, will know the truth, will know that there is a genocide there. They, like, Israel cannot hide it anymore. They are exposed. And now the most important thing is that every complicit party has to know that they will be the next. Israel may escape with it, but the other complicit parties will not.
That gave me hope, and that reminded me that this is a long struggle. And even though a ceasefire has not been ordered, which is a bitter pill for us to swallow, but this is still a victory. This is the first time that Israel has been officially, quite clearly reprimanded. And as Muin Rabbani, the Palestinian analyst, said, this is a stain on them forever.
Of Foreign Affairs on 6 December 2023.
The muted response to the ICJ's interim ruling shows that it wasn't just occupation Israel that was in the dock in the building behind me, but actually it was institutions like the ICJ, like the UN's top court, because people want to know that they can have justice that is tied to what's going on and not simply to Western political interests. The European Union has said it respects the decision of the court and expects all parties to comply. Meanwhile, Israeli ministers have taken to social media to call out both the ICJ for attempting to lecture Tel Aviv and again calling the South African case anti-Semitic. South Africa, who brought the action against Israel to the ICJ, acknowledged the six measures granted would be difficult to implement without a ceasefire.
This case was very much about international bodies ensuring that they exercise their responsibility to protect us all as global citizens.
From the river to the sea!
Israel has 1 month to make its initial report to the ICJ to show compliance of the special measures requested. Palestinians have indicated they will not hold their breaths. Amina Taylor, The Hague.
Faqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
آدم نباید نسبت به مؤمنین سوء ظن داشته باشه، بدبین باشه. شما تو قرآن همتون سوره حجرات رو دیدید.
We Muslims must not be pessimist about our other Muslim brothers or sisters. We have in the Holy Quran Surah Hujarat that we must avoid different types of pessimism and suspicion. Many of our pessimism are sins. We must not be pessimist about our friends, colleague, relatives, spouse, or neighbor. We have in our narrations that even if we see something unpleasant in our surroundings, we must not consider it as something evil or a sin. For instance, if your friend reaches you without saying salams, or he shows inattentive towards you in a meeting, you must not be pessimist about this behavior of his and think badly about him or her. You cannot refer to such behaviors as complex or disease. Maybe your friend's mind is busy with something. Imam Ali alayhi salam stated, "Always find a justification for the strange behaviors of your friends. And if you couldn't find any excuse or reason for his behaviors, try your best to make one." This sentence of Imam Ali means that we must not be pessimist about some of the strange behaviors of the people around us. In this way, we might not keep any animosity inside our hearts. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life pounding. Thank you.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Some 49% of Americans facing medicinal equipment shortages have been forced to delay or outright forgo medical treatment for their conditions. 24% have suffered negative health consequences, and 32% have experienced mental distress. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered this story and tells us more. A report warned 1 in 5 Americans have been impacted by crippling drug shortages. Manufacturing issues, supply chain hiccups, and natural disasters have all prevented patients from accessing the medical treatment that they need, including life-saving drugs for cancer, epilepsy, and type 2 diabetes. According to a Value Penguin analysis of U.S. census data, one of the 19% who faced a medicine or medical equipment shortage in the past month, 15% couldn't get a prescription medicine, 5% couldn't access over-the-counter medicine, and 3% couldn't get home medical equipment. The report suggested the ripple effect of the bevy of supply chain problems that plagued 2022 may still be to blame for the present-day medical shortages. The pandemic is also likely a culprit, causing historic declines in the manufacturing industry. COVID has also increased the demand for many types of medication and equipment, such as Paxlovid and N95 face masks. Some 49% of Americans facing a shortage have been forced to delay or outright forgo medical treatment for their conditions. 24% have suffered negative health consequences, and 32% have experienced mental distress. Floridian Laura Bray's daughter Abby was being treated for leukemia when she suffered an anaphylactic reaction to a critical drug, pegaspargase, meaning she could not take it again. The only Plan B drug, Erwinaze, had been on a national shortage list for a year, with the average wait list at 15 months. Laura set up a one-woman non-profit organization called Angels for Change, and after thousands of calls to hospitals, pharmacies, lawmakers, pharmaceutical companies, she found Erwinaze within 10 days. Drug and medical device shortages also lead to higher costs, which are passed down to customers in the form of higher out-of-pocket costs and higher insurance premiums. Researchers from LendingTree insurance subsidiary ValuePenguin.com analyzed data from week 62 of the U.S. Census Bureau Household Pulse Survey, conducted from 20th of September to 2nd of October 2023, the latest data at the time of their analysis. The Household Pulse Survey was designed to collect data on how people's lives are affected by emerging social and economic issues. The survey asked whether respondents or members of their households were affected by any of the following shortages: medicine that requires a prescription or is given by a provider, medication sold without a prescription, medical equipment or supplies used at home, such as infusion pumps, glucose monitors, home ventilators, face masks, and gloves. Analysts use this to estimate the percentage of adults in the United States and individual states suffering shortages and the resulting consequences. The report found that 31% of American public who pay for prescription drugs struggle to afford them, and 57% are actively anxious about the future of healthcare, including the cost of health insurance. The shortages were worse in West Virginia, where almost a quarter of adults are experiencing one kind of medical shortage. Concerningly, West Virginia has the highest drug use in the United States, too. The state also has the highest proportion of adults who couldn't get a prescribed medicine, 20% of the people. South Carolina and New Hampshire were also badly affected, with 24% and 23% of adults impacted respectively. This may be because of three states face substantial medical staffing shortages. People in Hawaii, Wisconsin, and Vermont were less impacted by drug shortages, with just 11%, 14%, and 15% of adults struggling in the past month. The website insiderintelligence.com has also covered the same story and tells us more. Today, there are 123 drugs listed by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, that are in short supply. Back in 2011, drug shortages were blamed in at least 15 deaths because of the correct drug was not available. A 2012 study found that when drug shortages forced doctors to swap medication in a clinical trial for Hodgkin's lymphoma, the number of patients who were cancer-free after 2 years dropped from 88% to 75%. In 2022, a spike in respiratory illnesses forced drugstore chains to temporarily limit purchases of fever-reducing medicines for children. A shortage of the antibiotic amoxicillin also cropped up around then. According to a report written by Senator Gary Peters, Democrat of Michigan, chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, injectable drugs used in hospitals and clinics, such as IV saline and some cancer treatments, are more than twice as likely as tablets or tropical treatments to experience a shortage. A national survey last year found that up to 8 in 10 hospitals and pharmacists are rationing drugs or delaying appointments as they battle a severe medicine shortage. The survey showed there are 309 ongoing drug shortages in the United States, the highest number in nearly 10 years, and just a few less than the all-time high of 320. The American Society of Health System Pharmacists, a group that tracks U.S. drug availability, surveyed more than 1,000 pharmacists and 99% said they were struggling to stock enough of the drugs that they needed. The group attributed the issue to limited investment in manufacturing capacity, subpar manufacturing quality, and a breakdown in the supply chain, as well as extreme price competition among generic drug makers. The critical shortage caused 85% of pharmacists to ration medications and 42% to delay or cancel treatments and procedures altogether, potentially risking the lives of severely ill patients who will now miss out on the care that they need.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the most outstanding Muslim dignitaries all across the world of Islam. I am Atar, the host of this program. With me in the studio, I have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Shaykh Fadai. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh Rouhani. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Fadai, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the most outstanding Muslim poets. Of course, a Persian ones, and most of his poems are in Farsi or Persian language, Shamsuddin Muhammad, mainly known as Hafez, known as Lasan al-Ghayb. Shaykh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. Give us some information about the early life of Shamsuddin Muhammad and why he was called Hafez.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The great Muslim poet and Persian poet Hafiz Shamsuddin Muhammad, known as Hafiz.
Yes.
Or Lisan al-Ghayb, the tongue of hidden world. Actually, he is called Hafiz because he was the memorizer of the Holy Quran. Because in Arabic, the one who memorizes the Holy Quran is called Hafiz. That's why it is said that due to the fact that Hafiz memorized the Holy Quran, that is why he is called Hafiz, and the title Hafiz is used for him.
Yes.
And yes, but of course there are some other ideas as well, but this is the most well-known explanation about the title of Hafiz for this Khwaja Shamsuddin.
So Hafiz means memorizer.
Memorizer.
And because
the Quran,
he memorized the whole Quran cover to cover, he was called as Hafiz. Okay?
Yes, of course. And then, of course, this Hafiz, it is said that he was originally from the people of Kuhpai or Kuhpai, from Isfahan.
Yes.
Who these people actually traveled to Fars, to Shiraz. And then Hafiz is the descendant of these people in Shiraz.
That's right.
Of course, he was born in around 700 or 720 of Hijri calendar. And of course, at his time, he was known as Shamsuddin,
yes,
and also Lisan al-Ghayb or Tarjuman al-Asrar. Different titles were used for Hafiz, but the most well-known was Hafiz, the memorizer of the Holy Quran, and he died around 792.
Yes.
Whose tomb is nowadays in Shiraz, which,
yes,
is a very beautiful place that,
yes,
our audience can go and visit that.
That's all right. Sheikh Fadai, Hafiz is known for his eloquence, I mean the sense of balagha in his poem in the Persian language. And, you know, up to an extent that when you take a look at the libraries of the Muslims, especially the Shiite ones in Iran, beside the Holy Quran and Nahjul Balagha, Sahifat al-Sajjadiyya, you can find a divan or poetic collections of Hafiz. Are Hafiz's poems originally religious ones or no? It is because of the main contents of the Hafiz poems and the topics which are tackled by Hafiz in his poetic collections are related to the public life of the people. That's why people welcome it very much. What is the main reason?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, in the both aspects, I mean, first in the aspects of language, Persian language, and the second aspect is the meaning.
Yes.
In both aspects, Hafiz is in the highest level.
Yes.
We have a quotation from Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei about Hafiz. He said that we can claim that Hafiz was in the highest level of Persian language and no word can reach him.
Mm-hmm.
And about the spiritual aspect of his poems, we have a quotation from Ayatollah Mutahhari. He said that Divan of Hafiz, we can say that this is a book of Gnosis and mysticism.
Yes.
In reality, it is a book of mysticism, or we call it Irfan in,
yes,
our religious language. So it is, the Divan of Hafiz, it is in the highest level, but we cannot compare it with Quran or Nahjul Balagha.
Yes.
We do not claim that Hafiz's words were in the higher level than Quran. You know, let me give you an example. Yes. For example, we say in Iran, the highest mountain is Damavand. But what about the highest mountain in the world, which is Everest?
Yes.
So when we say Hafez is in the highest level, yes. we mean in Persian language it is in the highest level.
Yes.
Not completely.
Yes.
But when we talk about Quran, we say according to language,
yes.
Balagha and Fasaha, it is in the highest level.
Yes.
We mean completely in the, all the languages, no word can reach it.
Okay.
So we do not ignore the level of poem of Hafiz, and it is the best in Persian. We cannot find better than this. And about his spiritual aspect, we can talk more. If there's time.
That's right. Okay. We'll talk more about it. But Sheikh Rouhani, Hafiz was under the direct influence of Islamic teachings and the Holy Quran. That's why we can find so many references to the ayahs of the Quran in his poems, isn't it? For example, even the qisas or the stories in the Quran, for example, the story of Hazrat Ibrahim, you know, Prophet Ibrahim, is we can say tackled by Hafiz. Ya Rab in atash ke dar jan man ast sard kun zan san ke kardi bar khalil. Khalil refers to Prophet Ibrahim. And the other, for example, ayahs of the Quran. So it shows that Hafiz was concerned with Islamic teachings and used the language of love in order to express it to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Prophet Muhammad, prophets, and sometimes the Ahlul Bayt, isn't it?
Yes, of course. As you rightly mentioned, you know, not only Hafiz, but also the other great Persian poets like Maulavi or the other great poets, all of them say or claim that their poems are a kind of explanation or interpretation of the Holy Quran. That is why Hafiz is also the same as the other great poets, because Quran is in the top of kind of or in the peak of eloquent kind of speeches that Muslim believe. So Hafiz was a Muslim, of course, beside that he was the memorizer of the Holy Quran.
Yes.
In his poem, in many, many, let's say, places in his Diwan or in his book, we see that he refers to the Holy Quran and actually bring the term Quran in his poems. Yes. For example, says that لَتَعِفِ حِكَمِيَا نُكَاتِ قُرْآنِي. Here also Hafiz refers to the Quran. Or هَرْچَ كَرْدَمْ هَمَا أَزْدُ لَتِ قُرْآنِ كَرْدَمْ. Whatever I have, whatever all the blessings I have is from the Holy Quran. He says that, or says that دِيْفْ بُقْرِي زَدَزَنْ قَوْمْ قُرْآنِ خَانَنْ. Says that the devil will flee from the people who read the Quran, who are with the Quran. And sometimes he warns actually the people saying that dam tazvir makun chun digaran quran ra, says that you should not misuse the Holy Quran sometimes for your own benefits, your own interests.
Eshqad rasad be faryad
ar
khod besan hafiz quran zabar bekhani dar 14 riwayat.
Okay. In let's say 14 let's say recitations or reading, I can read the Quran.
Yes.
Up to the time that you are with the Quran and you are reading the Quran, you are in contact with the Quran, you shouldn't be worried about anything. So these are lots of references in the poems of Hafiz. We see that he refers to the Holy Quran. As you rightly mentioned, there are many also references to the content of the Quran. Like, for example, the stories of the Prophet, some of the great teachings of the Holy Quran, for example. In the Holy Quran, we have this ayah in Surah An'am, chapter An'am, ayah 164, that وَلَا تَزِيرُ وَزِيرَةٌ وِزْرَ أُخْرَى. Hafiz makes use of this ayah, says that عَيْبِرَنْدَنْ مَكُنَ اِزَاهِدِ پَاكِزَ سَرَيْشْتْ كَيْقُنَاهِدْ دِگَرَانْ بَرْتُنَ خَاهَنْ نَوِشْتْ. Which means that you should care about your own self.
Yes.
Do not always complain about the others. Do not always, let's say, prostrate against others. It means that
you will not be asked about the other sins.
Of course, yeah.
Take care about
Take
your
care
own
about
accounts.
Yourself, yeah.
Your deeds. Be, that's right. Okay.
Or for example, فَذْكُرُونِي أَذْكُرُكُمْ in the Holy Quran. We have Surah Baqarah. We have this ayah. Hafiz made a very beautiful explanation of this ayah. It says that قَرَتْ حَوَاسْتْ كَمَأْشُوغْ نَكْسَلَتْ پَيْوَانْ نِگَهْدَارْ سَرِ رِشْتَ تَا
نِگَهْدَارَتْ
تَا نِگَهْدَارَتْ. Says that if you want to, that Allah, Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, leave not you alone, for example, in difficult kind of situations, you have to be always in contact with Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
نِگَهْدَارْ سَرِ رِشْتَ. It means be connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So yeah. that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will take care of you too.
Yeah, these are the very beautiful ayat of the Holy Quran that Hafiz made use of them in his poems.
Okay.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah.
But Sheikh Fadai, when we refer to Urafa, for example, Ayatollah Ghazi Tabatabai calls Hafiz as an RF, you know, also the Divan Hafiz poetic collections as a kind of Irfani booklet, you know, a manual for some people to refer to and learn. But there are some words or some expressions in Hafiz poets which, if are roughly translated or literally translated, they will mean something materialistic in our world. So how we can solve this contradiction between the words of the secular interpreters of Hafiz and Urafa, like Ayatollah Ghazi Tabatabai?
Yes. You know, it is usual in the world of poem that they use a lot of symbols.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if they talk about drinking, mm-hmm. they do not mean drinking alcohol. It's just a symbol.
Yes.
It means that I am connected to God and I do not understand anything else.
Yes.
Yes, it is an example. For example, when someone drink alcohol,
yes.
He do not understand anything else.
Mm-hmm.
We can say that he's not in this world.
Uh-huh.
So it's a symbol. He wants to say that I'm not in this world. I'm in the other world. I'm with God.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm drinking an alcohol drink that which is haram and taboo in the religion of Islam. When Hafiz call himself Hafiz, like the poem that you said, Ishq adresat be faryad dar khod besan Hafiz Quran zebar bekhani dar 14 rivayat. Someone who memorized Quran in the 14 different recitation, we cannot claim that he used to, for example, drink alcohol or something else. But I want to mention a point about Hafiz. When we say the Divan of Hafiz is a book of Irfan, so it means that religious people should pay attention to his works more than other people. But unfortunately, nowadays, it is vice versa.
Uh-huh.
If you go to Shiraz, you can see that usually people who don't care about religion, they gather around Hafiz, they, I don't know, play music, they dance, I don't know, and they record videos of dancing around Hafiz's tomb and share it in the social media. But what about religious people?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have, I don't know, any ceremony around the tomb of Hafiz?
Okay.
Of course not.
So in this way, we can say that the public and the people who do not have enough literary knowledge have superficial understanding out of Hafiz's poems, so they translate it. I'm talking about intra-translation.
Yeah, that is the misunderstanding of the poems of Hafiz.
Yes.
You know, these people now, really, they believe that Hafiz was a drinker.
Was a drinker and a dancer
and
or something like that?
He had a lot of girlfriend, dancing.
Okay.
No, they cannot understand the difference between symbol and the reality.
The symbolic meaning.
So it means that they don't have artistic understanding and comprehension.
Yes, an ironic meaning. And this is very important. As Sheikh Rouhani said, this case is true about most of our poems, like Maulavi, Attar, Sanai.
Now, that is our fault, religious people. We then do our job in order to introduce Hafiz and his art.
Yes, that's right. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, your final remarks regarding Hafiz. As I said, people even do tafa'ul with Hafiz or do a kind of consultation. They consult with Hafiz on different ceremonies, for example, on Shabbat Yalda, or for example, New Year's Eve, they put Hafiz, they open it by chance, they read a poem about it. Even this has been changed into a public culture. This shows that people of not only Iran, but Persian lands,
even, for example, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, okay, isn't it? Welcome Hafiz very much.
Yeah, why not? It is a kind of tradition, but it doesn't have any, let's say, religious basis. But
religious
it's
basis,
also a cultural
yes.
kind of tradition
yes. Yes.
that people sometimes refer to Hafiz, since the poems of Hafiz actually has this capacity to sometimes answer different mm-hmm. let's say, questions of the people. That's why they sometimes find their answers to in the poems of Hafiz. But the final point that I wanted to mention is about the Hafiz actually is love to the Ahl al-Bayt, alayhim salatu wassalam, that is mentioned in many of his poems because some people believe that he was Shiite mm-hmm. or some of them says that, no, he was Shafi'i. But we know that Imam of the Shafi'i, the Imam Shafi'i, has a very, very beautiful and meaningful poem regarding the Ahl al-Bayt, alayhim salatu wassalam, saying that if love of Ahl al-Bayt means that someone is Rafidi, I am the first Rafidi. This okay. is the poem that Imam Shafi'i mm-hmm. composed about the Ahl al-Bayt. So that's why Hafiz was also among the real and the sincere lovers of the Ahl al-Bayt, alayhim salatu wassalam. That's why in many of his poems he refers to the Ahl al-Bayt. He yes. mentions the beliefs of the followers of the Ahl al-Bayt in his poems regarding Imam al-Zaman, Imam Hussein, Imam Ali, and the other A'imma, alayhim salatu wassalam.
That's right. مرید پیر مغانم زمن مرنج ای شیخ چرا که وعده تو کردی او به جا آورد. They say it is referring to Imam Mahdi or Imam yes. As. Really, translating Hafiz into Arabic and English is difficult. And if you refer to the literal translation, I mean not sense for sense, you go astray. You cannot find the true meaning of Hafiz on that time. It is exactly like the Holy Quran, that roughly translated and literal translation cannot give you the answer. Unfortunately, Hafiz is known in some parts of the world through the English translation, which is not correct. So a person who wants to refer to the poems of Hafiz in English language must also refer to the exegesis, the commentaries and the interpretations and the footnotes on Hafiz.
No, interpretation is possible, but yes. translation is impossible.
It is impossible, yes, because of the also the capacity of the Persian language. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani. As we said, 792, according to the Hijra calendar, he passed away. He was buried in the Musalla. Today is the visiting place of so many visitors in Iran and also the tourists all across the world in the city of Shiraz. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man, Shamsuddin Muhammad, mainly known as Hafiz. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.